Hey, welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. It's a little, I guess misty is the word I would use to describe it out there. Misty. Joe Rex Road, good morning.
Yeah, that's a good description. I also thought, I just assumed it'd be like 30, and I had like my winter coat on and everything. It's like 62, so I guess
sign me up.
Take the good and take the bad. Also, Heisman voters are idiots, but we can get all into that.
Yes, idiots.
It's such an embarrassment.
Just an absolute travesty yesterday. Michelle, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Great this morning. That's all I have to say.
Glad you are. Well, let's just get into it real quickly. We'll get back into it a little bit later in the show. It is an absolute joke that Hendon Hooker is not a Heisman finalist. And look, by no means am I saying that he should win. I think we all would agree with that. But the fact that he was the best player in college football for like two-thirds of the year and he's not a Heisman finalist is pretty ridiculous to me. Shout out to Stetson Bennett for getting there. But the fact that Hendon Hooker is not a Heisman finalist is just a joke.
It's bad. And it does – it's a different deal, and I think it's more egregious. But a year ago, I thought the same thing. Like, you guys have got to look at the whole thing and – and I just think it's like basically some people just look at like the last couple games and go off that. Like you have to look at the whole thing. Last year, Kenneth Walker should have been in New York. I mean, every year there's somebody. Like every year, probably just about every year there's somebody. But this one was bad because, I mean, look, I like Stetson Bennett. He's a good player. He's not a better player than Hendon Hooker. And C.J. Stroud shouldn't be there either, in my opinion.
Agreed.
I mean, C.J. Stroud racked up some good numbers, but you could – You look at what he did against the competition, he did it, and then compare it to Hendon Hooker, and Hendon Hooker should be there over him too. So, it's very disappointing. But I guess it's not that surprising too. Again, they even allow for people to vote before the information's all there, which is stupid. I mean, yesterday I finally called them to put in my votes, and they're like, "Well, actually, can you email us?" I'm like, "Okay, I'll email you." Like after like an authentication process that was like I was trying to get into Fort Knox. So there's a lot of things to complain about with this.
Yeah, and look, I mean, obviously Tennessee fans very upset last night when he wasn't a finalist. The Heisman vote has always been something that just mystifies me because, and you would know this way better than me, there are so many people that I think just either don't pay enough attention or they just say, you know what, the last week of the season, that's what I'm going to base everything on, and they voted in. You know, as we talked about, there are people that send in their Heisman ballot before all the information is complete, which I think is just totally absurd, especially in a year like this where there really wasn't a clear-cut favorite. It's amazing to me some of the things that go into voting for the Heisman. And, look, I know there's no perfect voting process, and you're not going to find a perfect voting process in anything. We've talked about that, whether it comes to postseason awards in the NFL or whatever. But some of the Heisman voters, they got to take a look at that. Like, there's too many people voting on this award.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, it's like I like that former winners vote.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think you have to keep that going. I mean, now, granted, sometimes, you know, a former winner may be someone who, you know, just may be someone who, if they're not in the game right now, if they're not in media or something, they may not pay much attention to it, you know? So that's, but it's not that many people, so I'm fine with that. I think that everybody's ballot should be made public, first of all. And, because I think some people just like, there's a lot of voting that obviously goes regional, but like my ballot this year did, you know, I mean, I think what you see in person influences you and that's okay, you know, but some people I feel like do it like they have a you know, they're not voting what they think, they're voting what they want to happen. That shouldn't happen, you know? And the beyond that, like Ben, it's basically quarterback of best team. Yeah, that shouldn't be the Heisman winner. He's a very good player. But quarterback of best team should not just be like the default Heisman, or he's not going to win it, but should not even get enough votes to be in New York, and he did.
No, I totally agree. So it's, I thought, just a travesty that happened last night, and we'll get a little bit more into that coming up later next hour as well. We'll get Caroline Fenton's thoughts on that when she joins the show at 7 o'clock. Take your thoughts all show long at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, some news on the Preds front yesterday. Ryan McDonough will be out 2 to 4 weeks with an upper body injury. He left the game against the Islanders on Friday after getting hit in the face with a puck, so that's not good. We talked about that with Max Herz a little bit yesterday as well. 2 to 4 weeks, you bring up Jordan Gross. Obviously, Mark Borowiecki still dealing with his injury, so he had to make a call up down in Milwaukee. This is a shame for two reasons, Joe. Number one, you don't want to lose a guy to an injury for that long. But number two, like, I felt like he and Yossi were starting to get to where they were pretty darn good together. And now, all of a sudden, you had solidified your D pairs for the time being, and now you got to put them back into the shuffler. And whether that's Jordan Gross playing with Yossi and you leave the other two alone, I don't know what they're going to do on that front. Quite frankly, I don't think Jordan Gross should be playing that much if he's playing with Roman Yossi. Yeah. So I don't really know what you do there if you're John Hines, but not a great situation for the Predators having McDonough out 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, you probably have to move that around, right?
I would. Now, I don't know if they will or not. I understand the argument of, well, we feel good about Ekholm Carrier. We feel good about Lozon Fabro. Why would you mess up all three D pairs for one? I understand that, but I don't like Yossi and Gross together. I just don't.
Is it a bad idea to just like, just go back with Carrier Yossi and, you know, and just.
They have to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is too bad because it did seem like there was some momentum there, some chemistry, kind of part of why they're. I mean, Yossi on his own, right? Starting to look more like Yossi is part of why I think that they look better. But, yeah, that's. It's too bad because they haven't had continuity a lot because of a lot of mixing and matching and performance issues. And, I mean, shoot, it wasn't that long ago we were asking the question, like, McDonough? A lot of mileage, a lot of long, long years, you know, with Tampa. And then now he's starting to look more like himself, and this happens. So we'll have to see how they – it's just – there's a lot of weirdness with them, with, like, two long breaks, you know, in the middle of – a couple games there, and then this. I mean, it's just a very strange early December for the Preds right now.
It really is. And, you know, you had obviously the unscheduled break with the water main break, and now you go from playing back-to-backs Thursday and Friday to now you're off until this Thursday when you take on Tampa Bay, which, by the way, feel bad for Ryan McDonough not being able to go back to Tampa Bay with this injury too.
That does stink.
So that does
stink.
That's
too bad.
But after this, Joe, you got the Tampa game. You got Ottawa at home on Saturday. Nice afternoon start, which I'm all for. And then a big week next week. Huge week next week. St. Louis, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Colorado. That's three Central Division games and another Western Conference opponent game against Connor McDavid and company where they're all right there together in the standings. Really, the next 2 weeks, you have five Central Division games.
And it's not ideal to be missing him for that.
No.
Not great.
Not great at all. And I'm interested to see how they handle that part of it. I mean, look, the goal scoring has come on a little bit the last two games. Now, you got to keep in mind also that the goal scoring against the Islanders, yes, they scored four. They basically were in the defensive zone the entire game in that game, and they – you know, Matt Duchene pops the empty netter, then you get another one, and you win 4-1. So it's a little bit of a deceiving score in New York. You get the comeback win in New Jersey. But two games in a row where you've scored four goals, like, with, to me, you're going to have to continue to keep that coming and keep the goal scoring building, because it is amazing. Like, I look around the rest of the league right now, and goal scoring is just up. It's been up the last couple of years. I mean, they're just showing highlights on the screen in here of Vancouver and Montreal last night in a 6-6 game in overtime. We saw last week the 9-8 fracas between the Kings and the Kraken. So goal scoring is up. If you're the Predators, you're going to have to find a way to generate more goals as you move forward here, but maybe especially so without Ryan McDonough in there as one of your best defensemen.
Hockey's getting all wild and high scoring. Football's going slowing the other down way. I tell you what, it's all cyclical. Well, look, at least it's you know, actually a loss to have McDonough out right now,
yeah.
You know. And then, you know, I guess you could look at this as rest the legs for a while while the upper body heals, And maybe he'll be fresher and better when he comes back. But, yeah, the timing with some of these games ahead, certainly would like that guy out there.
Yep, and I'm interested to see how the Predators construct their D pairings. They'll be at practice again today. They practiced yesterday at Bridgestone, back at practice today at Centennial as they prepare to take on the Tampa Bay Lightning coming up on Thursday on the road. Be back at home on Saturday against the Ottawa Senators. And then some big games next week, St. Louis and Edmonton back-to-back, and then on the road at Winnipeg and Colorado as well before Edmonton comes back. So you're going to get a nice firsthand look at Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl twice in the next week at home. Be fun.
Yeah, and that hasn't gone well lately.
That has not gone well.
Lately, that's sort of – it's like they've made up for all those years that Pecorine used to beat them like a drum.
Yeah.
I mean, it is – boy. It's like they look especially fast against the Preds.
Very hard to contain those two guys. We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the Titans and get back into the Crossroads discussion that we had yesterday. There was an interesting point that Willie Donick brought up yesterday that I would like to get Joe's thoughts on as well. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda J. Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we had a lot of Titans discussion yesterday in the aftermath of the 35-10 loss to the Eagles. And a lot of big picture discussion about where the team is, which direction they're going, and what it means as they move forward here. John Robinson, obviously, getting a lot of flack yesterday, the day after that A.J. Brown torches the Titans, and he's the one that made the decision to trade A.J. Brown. There is something that Willie brought up yesterday that I think we also mentioned briefly that I want to get your thoughts on. Because Willie's point yesterday was, in the big picture discussion, go back to before the season and think about the conversations we were having about the Titans. You know, we spent all offseason talking about Ryan Tannehill, all those things. And the expectation for this team was right around 9-8, 10-7, 11-6, somewhere in that neighborhood. And right now, I feel like that's probably where they're going to finish, is around 10-7. That's probably the most likely route for the Titans at this point. So Willie's point was, given everything that they've gone through, the injuries, again, that they've sustained, you know, Ryan Tannehill's missed a couple of games, all those things, if you would have told Titans fans before the season that all of these different things would have happened and yet they'd still be 7-5 through 12 games, would you take it? And would you look around and say, you know, 10-7 is probably about where they're going to end up? That's exactly what the expectation was before the season. So, essentially, Willie's point was, why are we shifting the goalpost now? What do you make of the way that Willie kind of laid that out there? Which, by the way, Willie will be coming on our show at 9:30 today.
Okay, so let me – I missed this. So, let me make sure I understand. Okay, so I get the whole would you take it. But what does he mean by shifting the goalpost?
Well, Chase and D-Mace were talking about just the direction and how this team is not good enough to compete, which we talked about yesterday. But Willie's point was, yeah, we kind of already knew that heading into the season, right? Like, we knew that the Titans were not an actual contender in the AFC.
Yeah, I would disagree with Willie on that. I mean, there's a lot of things we didn't know that have happened. I mean, look, first of all, going into the season, Taylor Lewan was your left tackle, which I actually thought not only, you know, is it he's been a good player, but I actually thought he'd have a big year with a healthy offseason. So there's one thing that, look, again, that's no one's fault, but that's one thing that I thought would be better about this team, and it's awful. And, of course, yesterday, Vrabel's talking about how LaRaven Clark has a chance to compete. Good for him, but, dude, did you watch him play the other day?
Oh, boy.
I mean, again, it's like anybody – it's like ABR, anybody but Raidens at the left tackle. So I understand, like, the big picture, to step back and look at it 7-5, yeah. I mean, a lot of people might be like, okay, I get what you're saying, but – it's week to week watching a team play, and I wasn't I didn't know a lot of things. I didn't know what Treylon Burks was going to be. I didn't know what Kyle Phillips was going to be. Was Derrick Henry going to be vintage Derrick Henry? And I don't know. I mean, I think the reason we didn't think that they would be a contender is because we didn't believe that Tannehill would ultimately get it done, right?
Right.
I mean, we're so far from, like, will we even know? I don't even know if we'll know if Tannehill's good enough.
Now, I will say, I mean, the day after the A.J. Brown trade, we knew that the Titans weren't going to be a contender in the AFC. I mean, we talked about that. So,
yeah.
I can't sit here and say that I thought the Titans were going to be a contender in the AFC coming into the season.
Well, yeah, if you keep it that simple, then I have to agree. But it's also like, okay, but people are having to watch a team that can't get to 20 points on a weekly basis. You know, so
I didn't think it'd be this bad.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's and, like, there's just always surprises. I mean, again, the 2019 season, yes, absolutely, we said it, and you're right. And no one was picking – I mean, I didn't pick the Titans to win the freaking division. I picked the Colts. So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of lack of belief in them being all that good. But there's also – there's still the unknown of every season. Again, 2019 is the greatest example of, like, you think you know what a team is, and then it's a completely different thing at some point. I'm not saying that's happening with these guys. I don't see the path there with the personnel they have, but I'm just saying you still have reason. There's still enough variables with just about any team that you this and this work out. What does that mean? You know, this defense at times I think it has been as good as we thought it could be, and it's not right now in the wake of 35-10. But at times it has looked really, really good. Right?
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, look, I mean, I can't disagree with the large point there that we didn't expect them to be contenders. I mean, my question now, though, is, like, are they going to, like, be embarrassing in their one little playoff game?
Yeah. You know? Well, I think the question that I have, which is it's an interesting one to ask, they're 7-5, but how good are they? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know how good they are. And we, you know, they were having this conversation yesterday of, you know, if you're in basically any other division in the league, you're not making the playoffs. Probably not, but I don't really know how to judge how good they are or not, because they are 7-5. They do have a winning record. They probably are going to end up around 10-7, maybe 11-6, somewhere in that neighborhood. And yet going into the playoffs, unless something shifts dramatically with the way that they play down the stretch, like, I don't know if there's a matchup in the first round of the playoffs that I would pick them to win as we sit here today. I'm not saying they can't win it. I just don't know if there's a first round playoff matchup today that I would pick them to win.
Yeah. I mean, the Jets. Is there any chance of them getting the Jets in here, I guess, you know?
Ravens.
Maybe right now they're probably gonna be the 4 seed.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a
4-5. Probably Ravens or Bengals, right? It's like whoever doesn't win that division is probably who they're going to get. So
most likely.
It could be the Dolphins. Could be the Bills.
It could be.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I would not pick them to win that game.
No. Yeah, I think the Bills are about to take off. You know, the Dolphins, yeah, like in any case, you could talk yourself into it. You know, the Dolphins, what if the weather's bad and, you know.
Yeah, like I'm not saying they couldn't win. I don't know that I'd pick them.
No, I don't think that many will. Now, granted, we don't know how the Titans are going to respond and perform here in the next few weeks, and maybe it will look different. But, I mean, when you go through basically a month straight of not being able to, you know, to run the football at all with this team, if you can't run the football at all, I don't know what the path looks like. So, yeah, it's like – would you take it? I mean, a lot of people right now would say, oh, heck no. But it's not just the 7-5 they're talking about.
Right.
You know, they're talking about just the actual guts of the team and the performance, which is – it's hard to watch a lot.
Especially, I mean, look, offensively, I don't know what the solution is if you can't block moving forward. Like, if you can't block in the running game and you can't block in the passing game, what do you do? Like – that goes even towards the Todd Downing discussion. Like right now, if the season ended this exact second, which I hate these discussions, but we'll have them anyway. If it ended this exact second, I would say it's probably time to move on from Todd Downing. Go find a different offensive coordinator. Not even convinced he's a bad offensive coordinator, but the numbers offensively are what they are the last 2 years. So go find somebody else. But right now, like, like I watched that game Sunday, and while I didn't come away from it thinking to myself, ooh, Todd Downing did a great job there, I'm also like, I don't really know what any play caller is supposed to do when you can't block anyone at the line of scrimmage. And that is what it felt like on Sunday. They couldn't block anybody in the running game, passing game, whatever you want to take it.
I agree, but I do think that there are some play callers who would do a better job of figuring something out. Again, I'm not going to pretend to sit here and say you should have done A, B, C, but I do think that there are other play callers who would maybe do a little bit less banging the head into the brick wall. There's some level of that you have to do. I mean, that's what they are. You have to give a player of that caliber a chance. I mean, you have to give him opportunities. You have to give him the ball. I mean, again, he only got it 11 times. But I think that you just have to – I mean, there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors that you've got to try to figure out here if you can't block, right? And ultimately, it's probably not going to work out for you, but try something different. And I think that, it's unfortunate for him in terms of the situations he's had as an OC, but I also think there's no way you can look at everything now of his career as an OC and put none of it on him.
Exactly.
I mean, you'd have to be a family member of his to do that.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think there's a good chance something like that happens at the end of the season anyway. Right now, I mean, their offense is in such a bad spot right now. Like, we got a text on the text line from Josh that says, I had more fun watching the 2006 rookie year Vince Young offense than I do this year in 2022. Our defense is the only true bright spot of our team. Like, I was thinking about this yesterday. Like, the offense right now, as presently constructed, with all the issues that we know are there, like, how bad is this offense compared to some other offenses that we've seen? And now, you know, is it as bad as the Zach Mettenberger-led Titans? I'm going to go with no. There have been some worse offenses that the Titans have had. But numbers-wise, like points per game, it's pretty bad right now. And I just don't know what the solution is going to be moving forward if you can't block. I mean, it just puts you behind the eight ball so badly.
Well, how does it compare to, again, the full circle? Like, the day that Ryan Tannehill basically got the job was 16-0 loss at Denver in 2019. With A.J. Brown tearfully apologizing to Marcus Mariota after the game because basically he knew that Mariota was losing his job. How does this offense right now compare to what that was in that moment with a lot, not a lot, but some of the same personnel?
Well, I will say that Denver game may be the worst NFL game I've ever watched. So it's hard to say it was that bad. But, I mean, when you're having conversations and comparing it to that, it's not great. I mean, what are they in points per game right now? Kansas City's at number one in the league. I think Kansas City is around 29-2. The Titans are at 18.3. That's where they're at, 18.3 points per game. Only the Bucks, the Steelers, the Rams, the Colts, the Texans, and the Broncos are worse. I mean, you can't win the playoffs that way.
No. And, you know, you're talking almost two full – that's the crazy thing. You're talking almost two full touchdowns per game less than you averaged 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago, what was more fun? I'm sure you know you still had the Chiefs out there throwing around and the Bills and all that stuff, but there wasn't much in the NFL more fun than watching that offense 2 years ago with Derrick Henry going for 2,000, Ryan Tannehill, like Pro Bowl level quarterbacking, A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, good offensive line, et cetera, et cetera. 2 years ago,
I know.
I mean, it's so that when you think about it in those terms, it is stunning, like how badly it's gone backward in a short period of time.
Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. More on the Titans and their struggles coming up next. Jeff, hang with us. We'll get to you on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. We'll be joined by Caroline Fenton coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll get her thoughts on all things college football. A very busy time in college football right now, so lots to get to with Caroline coming up at 7 o'clock. Right now, talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line and welcome in Jeff from Franklin. Jeff, thanks for holding. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys, thank you so much. Really, really enjoy your all show.
Thank you.
Hey, I totally agree with the comments on the offense, et cetera, but I was there on Sunday. And, you know, there's a rumor out there about the Eagle fans not being too nice. It's okay. Very, very true. So secondly, it seems like the defense is getting a little bit of a pass. And what I mean by that, I know the performance early on was good, but, you know, going into the game, it seemed like Jalen Hurts, the biggest concern was, you know, his legs. And he's proved that. Who would have thought, again, that he would throw for 400 yards? And just to put that on the defensive backs is not correct, and I understand the line never got to them, but, you know, the word soft kept coming up, that they kept playing soft, especially in the backfield, the defensive backs. And I just feel like really the defense is getting a pass, and just wanted to get your guys' thoughts more so on that defensive passing game that we had this past Sunday.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. I appreciate it. I mean, look, the bottom line is, Joe, you gave up 35 points, you gave up almost 400 passing yards through the air. And the big thing that stands out to me is the last 2 weeks without Danico Autry, I mean, you haven't been able to generate much on the quarterback. And when you're not generating a pass rush, you're going to get exposed on the back end. And that's what's happened the last 2 weeks. More so this past Sunday against Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown and company.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so violent and disruptive. So, I mean, look, I think the point is fair. I always go back and forth on that because – it's like we're just talking about the offense and they just gave up 35. Also, like the expectations, the amount of weight put on the shoulders of the defense is so large because of the offense, you know, that I feel like, I mean, because there are other weeks where, well, shoot, the Bengals game, you know, it's like, I mean, in that locker room talking to Byard, it's like they just gave up 50. Like you guys gave up 20 to the Bengals, 20. And everybody's mad. You know, that's the margin for error that exists for this defense. So I kind of feel like if you have that kind of burden, I give you a little bit of a pass. But yeah, it was bad the other day. Look, again, it was bad, and it was also a lot of the story to me is just I feel like Jalen Hurts was tremendous. And if he's going to throw the ball like that, I don't know what many defenses are doing against those guys because they can run it a lot better than they showed. They didn't even bother with it, nope. You know, and they so it was a bad performance though. I mean, there's no doubt it was a bad performance all the way around from the Titans. It's again, let's go back 2 years. It's like the exact conversations, just turn it around. Back then, you know, it's the offensive guys saying, "Hey, we support the D, and we know those guys are trying hard and they're working hard, and you know, we're a team." And 2 years later, it's like the defense, like, "Oh, you know." I mean, like, no one's ripping the offense. You know, you'll hear, like, we didn't play well in all three phases. That's about as close as it gets. But it's the same idea. You know, now it's like, oh, we know the offensive guys will figure it out. They'll work it out and everything. By the way, if we're going to not give passes, let's also not give passes to the special teams because they were atrocious.
They're bad.
Atrocious Sunday. It didn't matter much. A lot of the mistakes and stuff, like the game, it was academic, but it was bad. I mean, I hate to be that guy, but I mean, Greg Aukerman, like, I mean, well, you got it. I mean, that's you got to look at him too. I mean, the OC and the DC, the OC and the DC obviously are the immediate targets when that side of the ball or that side of the ball plays poorly. I mean, he is the special teams coordinator.
He is.
Pretty bad couple weeks here.
It's been a bad couple of weeks. And on the defense front, like, at least when you take the whole view of this season, like, the defense has still been pretty good for the most part. Now, I said this yesterday. You do look at some of the games that they've played against really good teams, and they got torched by Buffalo. They got torched by Philadelphia. They gave up some big plays to Cincinnati. They played really well against Kansas City. Like, you can nitpick the Kansas City performance if you really want to and say, why did you let Patrick Mahomes run for 30 yards?
They let him make a couple plays.
Yeah, but, I mean, come on. I mean, they played awesome against Kansas City.
They were fantastic.
So there have been three times this year, basically, where the defense has given up a little bit more than you want. And one of those games I'm talking about, they gave up 20 points. So, I mean, the defense, I'm still not all that worried about. And beyond that, like, I look at the defense, and I at least can see solutions. Like, okay, Danico Autry comes back. Jeffrey Simmons gets healthy, which I don't think he is right now. you get healthier in the secondary, like Christian Fulton finally gets over a hamstring, like you can at least see solutions. Now, whether or not all those solutions come to be, I don't know, but you can at least see them on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know if I can see them on the offensive side of the ball based on the offensive line. Like, to me, the offensive line is what it is at this point, and it's going to be very difficult for this team to overcome that.
Right, and I can see solutions, but again, the solutions, like, basically all have to hit because the defense has to be the freaking 85 Bears for them to do anything in the postseason.
Right.
So, are they going to be that? Yeah, I don't know. It's very obvious, though, that Danico Autry coming back is a big deal. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons, again, it's not like – I mean, you know, you automatically think, okay, Autry's out, so now Simmons is just doubled all the time. I mean, Simmons – more than you would think, has been blocked with one guy, I think, in the last couple weeks. And, again, I think that speaks to the fact that he's banged up. And that makes a big difference. If you don't have that explosion, you can't push off like normal. I mean, he's not. He just doesn't look nearly as dominant. So I think it's the ankle and the absence of Autry both combining to hurt him.
I got a texter that says, a team doesn't get that bad that quick without a bad GM. John Robinson is cheeks at drafting offensive line. Dude is the problem. The fact this team has won 7 games makes Vrabel a Hall of Fame level coach. It's from a text on the text line. I would say one thing that is very clear to me, Joe, as this season has gone on, that the divide in Vrabel has become very large with the Titans fan base.
Yeah, Vrabel has become like Wham, okay? So, I mean, Vrabel is George Michael, and John Robinson has become Andrew Ridgely. Which, like, and if you actually even know Andrew Ridgely's name, Wham fans, then I'm very I'm impressed.
I didn't know his name, so I'm glad you brought that up.
And Andrew Ridgely, have you heard of Andrew Ridgely?
What do you think?
Have you heard of Wham?
No,
dude,
I don't even know what that is.
My generational divide.
Well, we're gonna have a Wham day on the show.
May have to.
I got some
band.
We got some of Caroline's favorite songs, but that's just because she has a dorky dad from the 80s. Yes, Vrabel is Wham. There you go.
There we go. Tyler on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, also, I'm tired of this BS of why we're disappointed the team is as good as we thought they might be going into the season. The reason we're disappointed is because we were shown glimpses of good against the Chiefs and the Bengals, but we can't get over the hump. And the goal is to win the freaking Super Bowl and not meet expectations of 10-7. Now, I understand that. Now, I would also say, what glimpses of good against the Chiefs and the Bengals were you shown offensively with any sort of regularity? They did nothing offensively against the Chiefs.
Well, they ran it against the Chiefs.
They ran
Derrick Henry had a good night.
Derrick Henry had a good night against the Chiefs, and then you did nothing in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, again, you had Malik Willis at QB.
The Bengals, you completed one deep pass to Traylon Burks, and Derrick Henry had a nice screenplay. Like, offensively, you haven't shown many glimpses of anything all year.
Yeah, and look, to what your point earlier was, to that texter, I'd say, I mean, we did say basically, oh, there goes the window when A.J. Brown was traded, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now, again, do you know with certainty? No. Traylon Burks could be the rookie of the year leader right now. I didn't know what was going to happen there. I didn't know who's going to get hurt or not or anything. There's a lot of things you don't know. Didn't know Taylor Wilde was going to be lost, but when A.J. Brown left this team, realistically, you're starting over at that spot and you're trading away a great player and you are going backward, and they certainly have.
Well, we said it the day after the Bengals game in the playoffs last year. We had, you know, an hour-long segment on, kind of feels like that was it for the Titans, and they missed their window.
And that's when we assumed A.J. Brown would be back.
We thought A.J. Brown would still be on the team. Now,
but that was all about Tannehill.
Right. Now, the reasons have shifted since then dramatically. But, I mean, it feels like they're trending downward, and that's not a good place to be. And even at 7-5, I still wonder, like, how good they really are. Like, how good can you be with this offense that they have? It's just really hard to get there. Now, having said that, Joe, we had this same discussion flipped 2 years ago with the defense for the Titans, and the playoffs came around. And the defense played well, and the offense wasn't very good in that game against Baltimore. So, in a one-game sample size in the playoffs, anything can happen. I understand that moving forward. It's just hard for me to get there with this offense right now. It really is.
Yeah. Now, there is a lot of – I got when's the last time we got an interception? Secondary is awful. Fulton's overrated. Nobody's talking about how Byard's a no-show, doesn't do anything. Ethan from Lawrenceburg, this is a middle-of-the-pack defense that's been helped by a soft schedule. Yeah, I think that's a little bit overreaction on the defense. Look, 35-10. I get it. We're in the wake of 35-10. So nothing looked good. Fulton has kind of fallen off a little bit here.
Yes.
It's probably hamstring related. I don't know.
I would add McCreary to that list too. He's fallen off a little bit too. But he's a rookie.
Who's McCreary. That? Yes, McCreary's getting picked on. Byard, I don't know. I think Byard's been pretty good this year. Obviously, he's not piling up the picks and stuff like that. Again, they've had some really good performances on that side of the ball. How many times has the offense had a really good performance?
Not very many. Green Bay.
Yeah, that was a good night. You didn't run it like you wanted to, but you threw it really well.
Yeah,
and you had creativity, and yeah, they need to get back.
27, man.
I mean,
it's a heck of a night for this offense.
Lock the doors.
Got a texter that
says, "Wake me up before you go go."
This roster is why you can't build the roster the Patriot way without a Tom Brady. The Titans have made the worst trade in Titans history. A lot of that on the text line yesterday. Not a very good trade. I'm not going to do that.
I told you.
Well,
so
I've heard a lot of commentary about that the last couple of days. Very few. There's been very few of the. I still don't think trading AJ Brown was a mistake. Text on the text line the last couple of days.
What about Jared? Is Jared still?
I know. I think he's totally in your camp now.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, just to last week, he's like, Traylon Burks has had better stats the last two. AJ's been fumbling. Like, Jared, stop. Take the microphone away. Turn it. Mute yourself.
We'll have more of your thoughts on the Titans coming up next. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll also get into some of Mike Vrabel's comments on the offensive line from yesterday as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Why aren't you looking outside for offensive line help the way you looked outside for defensive back help when all of those defensive backs have done such a terrific job helping?
You have an option of finding guys on somebody's practice squad that you can poach. You have the option to sign guys off the street, which I don't know what would be there. You know, I mean, we're looking for players that are there. You know, we've signed a lot of guys off other people's practice squad that are playing for us. So, at some point, you know, we got to figure if they're not playing for them, you know, they're gonna play for us.
That was Mike Vrabel yesterday on why they haven't gone out and signed more offensive linemen either on practice squads and off the street. I enjoyed that question from Paul Kaharsky. It's a fair one. I mean, you've signed all these guys defensively. Why have you not done the same with this offensive line? And to me, Joe, that kind of sounded like Vrabel's way of saying, yeah, there's nothing out there, man. Not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it is a fair question. Look, Eric Fisher got signed with the Dolphins. Dolphins get Eric Fisher?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Hey, look.
Last time he played, he was very bad. But
absolutely. So I get that. I would say this, sure hope for Andrew Ridgely's sake that he doesn't play well with them. He probably won't, but that's one of those, it's a name people know, so please, you know, make this move, and usually it doesn't work out. But, I mean, I agree with the general idea. I think when you compare those two positions, it's probably a little, I'd say it's probably quite a bit easier to find a corner safety who can come in and help you a little bit here and there in spots. You know, because remember, defense, you got dime, you got this and that. You can put someone in a certain spot and say, do this, and you can be okay, hide them a little bit, whatever. I mean, if you're an offensive tackle, you play every snap of a football game, and there's no hiding, you know?
Sure.
And there are very few. I just think there are a lot fewer people who are good at offensive tackle than people who are good at, like, defensive back in the world. There's a very few of all of them. The best, you know, the best football players in the world, but I do think there's a little difference. It's not apples to apples comparing those two positions.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Scott. Scott, thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. Love your show. Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, I wish the media would quit all this hype about the King, because whether it's the offensive line, whether it's him coming back from an injury or whatever the case may be, he's not playing, the team's not playing like he's the king. I mean, it's almost to the point to where it's embarrassing.
Thanks for the call, Scott. Are we
Wait, what?
Are we hyping up Derrick Henry too much?
Okay, he said hyping up the king. Okay.
Correct.
At the beginning, I thought he said the team. Okay, so, yeah, the king. Okay, well, look, we've talked. I mean, I think we've been talking quite a bit about what's up with Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
He's still a very good player. He's, I think, not the same exactly as he was at his peak.
Well, and what we're talking about right now factors into that. Like, when you can't block anyone.
Right. I mean, look, bottom line, whether it's hyping up or not, we're going to talk about him. He's a hugely important player. Like, they're built around Derrick Henry carrying the football.
Yeah.
So, if they succeed or fail, he's going to be a huge part of the story, right?
For sure.
Has to be.
Well, look, this is the way this team is built, to run the football, to play good defense, and to win games that way. I mean, look. We can go back and the discussion's out there. And look, maybe it's a legitimate one. Should the Titans throw the ball more than they do right now? I don't know. I would say to that, we spent an entire offseason discussing the quarterback and how he's not an elite quarterback in this league. And you think the solution is to have him drop back and throw it 45 times a game with this offensive line? It's probably not going to go well.
No, but, well, right. But, I mean – the discussion is once you get to the pressure of the playoffs after the way he played against Cincinnati, how could you trust him? He's still a – he's a quarterback who can
– he's a good quarterback.
He's a good quarterback.
Well, yeah. He's had a good year.
Yeah.
All things considered.
It's actually amazing his numbers when you compare him to last year, given like it's gotten a lot worse, starting, you know, with Lawan, AJ. Someone on the text line brought up, you know, Lawan missed a lot of time. That's true, but we didn't know he was going to tear his ACL again. Now, let me just get to Ken and Waverly on the text line.
Okay.
Driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, because I mean, it's about time we have a little, you know, exchange of ideas here. He says, we keep talking about Todd Downing and J-Rod. When are we going to start talking about Vrabel? Why does he get a free pass every week? How much longer do we switch the blame for a poor team? Other teams do poorly. Their head coach is gone. George Michael, sit your butt on that hot seat.
Well, first off, they're 7-5. It's not like they're, it's not like they're, you know, 3-8 out there.
It's the week after a blowout loss, yeah. Man.
They're 7-5. Look, I'm trying to think of where I would rank Vrabel right now on their list of problems. It may be at the actual very bottom. Like, it may be, maybe not at the bottom, like, I don't know, Jeff Simmons may be in last place of their problems or something like that. But Vrabel might be at the bottom.
Well, look.
He might be the very last person I blame.
Here's what I'll say about Vrabel, though, is like Vrabel, big picture, unless he goes to Ohio State,
yeah.
Is his staff is big. I mean, the Downing thing, like, again, I'm not all hot and bothered about, like, firing Craig Aukerman like some people are, you know. But Todd Downing is a big decision moving forward here, and there's just going to be some of those tough decisions. You know, I think Vrabel would rather – I really think Vrabel's like a guy who would never, ever want to, like, quote-unquote, sacrifice a coordinator. And it's not like it would be that.
Right.
Like, it's – you know, some you see this in college football all the time. You see it in the NFL, too. Sometimes it was like, basically, well, you got to get rid of that coordinator if you want to keep your job. We saw it with Mularkey. Mularkey was gone. Respect to Mularkey, by the way, on that. But – like, Vrabel's not going to be strong-armed into making a decision, but he needs to, at times, evaluate and say, could someone else be better in this incredibly important job?
Yeah.
And that's where I'd look at Vrabel and say, we're going to find out. But as far as just overall, yeah, he's really good, guys. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Very, very
really good head coach.
Well, the question in the immediate future is, like, is there anything you can do with this offensive line to help it out, to make it a little bit better as they move forward? And obviously, Dennis Daly is getting a lot of the attention right now based on some of the snaps he had against Philadelphia and the snaps that he's had basically a lot of times in every game since he's taken over as the starting left tackle. And a lot of discussion on the Dennis Daly front yesterday with Mike Vrabel. Here was some of that from Vrabel yesterday at his press conference.
Solution in any phase, you know, so I wouldn't say that we had any solutions in any phase. Speaking specifically for Dennis, you know, there are, you know, you can go through them. You know, there's plays where I think it's he's doing his job. And then there's plays where, you know, we know we can't get beat inside. You know, we're chipping for him, and you can't get beat inside. And critical error in third and one, we've had guys jump off sides before, but certainly in the red zone, things are magnified. You know, I think on one of the sacks that he gave up, had Josh Sweat at 10 or 11 yards at the top of the pocket. To me, anybody that's blocking Josh Sweat, if they block him at 10 yards at the top of the pocket, we're going to have to be able to step up. And guess what? The quarterback couldn't step up. So, yeah, those are things that, you know, and then there were some other plays that aren't very good that, you know, we had a backside cutoff on a four eye where, you know, he butted him under the chin, his hands were inside, and he pancaked him. But, you know, there's when you play that position, you know, there's some things that are glaring when you get beat. So he's going to work hard. The Ravens going to have a chance to compete. But that's who we got on the roster right now.
So that was Rabel yesterday discussing the Dennis Daly situation. And, you know, as you would expect him to say, basically, he's had some good snaps, had some snaps that he would like back, but the real thing I took away from that, Joe, was what he said at the end there. Like, basically, this is what we got.
It's who we got on the roster right now. I hear that.
So, to answer my own question of whether or not, like, any offensive line help is coming or you can do anything different, I mean, I kind of feel like if they felt like they could do something different, then they probably would have by now. Maybe it is LaRaven Clark. But based on what I saw Sunday, I don't know if the result's going to be all that different if he's the starting left tackle.
Well, maybe. Well, easily could be worse.
Could be worse. So it's not what you
Daly
want.
Doesn't get like launched into the air on every snap. So there is that.
We'll get back into the Titans a little bit later in the show. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Caroline Fenton from Stillman & Company. We'll get her thoughts on a very busy time in the world of college football. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.